also really excited about the potential culture shift that this can create. You know, up until I worked on this campaign, I never shared that I was in recovery, especially professionally. And now I'm realizing that it's done so much healing for me to see that it is a health issue and I don't need to be ashamed, and that I can help other people by sharing my experience of being in recovery. And so I would love for my 4-year-old daughter to grow up in a world where it's addiction is recognized as a health issue the way we think of, you know, heart disease or diabetes, and where people are met with medical care, love and compassion, and given the tools they need to get well rather than shamed.
Thank you guys so much for your time. Once again, that was Devin and Haven from the Yes on 110 campaign. Thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it.
KBOO Portland. To you, the 9-to-5er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Labor Radio, of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. I'm Jamie Partridge. My co-host Amanda Hill is not able to be with us this evening. Tonight we are talking about what to do if Trump tries to steal the election. Fortunately, at the national and local levels, labor and community organizations are planning and preparing mass resistance. Our guests this evening are Lori King and Dave King, longtime labor activists and organizers, early leaders of Jobs with Justice, and currently active in the Climate Jobs Group. Welcome, Lori and Dave. All right. So, hey, tell me a little bit before we get into the meat of our discussion about the possible coup by Trump. Tell us what Jobs with Justice is all about. I mean, sorry, what the Climate Jobs Group is about.
We formed to try to undo the jobs versus the environment mythology that kind of runs around in the labor movement. And actually that's been a struggle, but it's starting to bear fruit. I think the fires and the smoke have helped. Reality's helped. And excuse me, the kind of things that we're doing are, we've had one Labor 101 class with Sunrise, and we're planning other kind of educational events for both for labor to familiarize labor with the environmental and the climate movement, and vice versa, more sessions to educate the climate movement and environmental movement about how labor works and what labor is and all that. So we're doing that. We have a project where we're taking PSEF, I suppose people know what the Portland Clean Energy Fund, and the State Community Solar Program, and marrying them to try to build an array using both of them, because community solar does a lot of good things. It allows people that don't have roofs or are renters to still get lower energy bills and you know, be part of the solar program. And PSEF helps to pay for it, and because community solar doesn't have any pay, but it means that a lot of other people can be part of it. So, you know, we're doing stuff with the city, with the city's, what is it,
the Climate Emergency Declaration.
Climate emergency.
Getting labor language into that and getting labor, and we're working to get labor protections for workers having to deal with climate stresses like heat and smoke.
There's some solar and wind, quite a few projects being built in Eastern Oregon with non-union labor. Really low, bad conditions. And so we're gonna be putting pressure on to make, and that state, the state's subsidizing that. So we're working on that too.
Right.
Well, great. Is there a number or an email that people who wanna be connected with climate jobs can find you?
Yeah, our email is landd_@q.com.
The letter Q.com.
Yeah.
Okay.
Great.
That's climate jobs. Now let's jump into the threat.
Yes.
What about Trump? Trump and the Republicans have been doing, what have they been doing to prepare for stealing the election?
Right. Well, first of all, a common reaction to talking about threats, like threats of a coup, is like, it can't happen here, you know, not in our country. And I think people are thinking of like a military bunch of people ousting some president from an office and replacing that with military brass. But a coup in the United States can be as simple as stealing an election. And Trump and his enablers have been just, you know, trying to do just that. You know, they've been talking, and Trump's and others have been talking for months about how he can only lose in a rigged election. And, you know, one of the biggest lies is that mail-in ballots are fraudulent. There's been a real attack on mail-in ballots, you know, with Trump and his enablers thinking that Democrats are likely to vote with mail-in ballots and Republicans are more likely to, you know, brave the threat of COVID and go to the polls on November 3rd. You know, and assuming that, you know, that's true, you know, he's hoping that on November 3rd, late at night, it'll look like he won. And then, you know, all of that narrative to discount mail-in ballots will come into play.
Because the mail-in ballots won't be counted.
They won't be counted by then. No, they may, and they may take quite a while to count, partly because Trump's been messing with the Postal Service. So, you know, he's been pushing with Postmaster, his name is DeJoy. Doesn't
yep.
sound very joyful, but he's actively dismantled, acted to dismantle parts of the public postal service infrastructure. You know, they literally have taken down mailboxes and sorting equipment. And it was good that, you know, people pushed back and they stopped doing that, but still a lot of damage was done. And, you know, they're messing, the post office top brass is messing with scheduling and understaffing. You know, we were just, Dave and I were just saying that we often are getting our mail at 7 or 8:30 at night. And, you know, what does that mean? It means there's not enough, you know, not enough infrastructure in the post office that should be there. And that's critical in terms of, well, work for the postal workers, but also, and letter carriers, but for the election. And then, you know, Trump and his ilk have been working, Republican judges and legislators are ruling that ballots that come in late are fraudulent, are just not going to be counted. No, and then also, you know, who gets to vote? That there have been a lot of Republican and probably complicit Democrats involved in really lowering the vote of that will really affect Democrats. It's quite amazing that just pushing down the Democratic vote. 1 in 16 African American people of voting age are disenfranchised. You know, in large part, it could be because they are getting out of prison and not allowed to vote. You know, another reason. You know, and then there's intimidation at the polls. Trump is calling for an army of poll watchers, which is horrific. And then there's also there's so much here. And there's also the Supreme Court, the packing of the Supreme Court. You know, with this Amy Coney Barrett, who's clearly going to when cases come, trying to figure out like how votes should be counted in different states, who are the true electors in that state. You know, that she will clinch this. You know, she could very well clinch the Supreme Court deciding that the electors in a particular state do not have to actually follow the popular vote. So how are they going to decide? Because there's going to be countless lawsuits and cases having to do with ballots that may not have been signed perfectly. Ballots that came in 4 days late in a particular place. I mean, there's going to be so many lawsuits about these things. And if these go to the Supreme Court.
Well, and as we know, in 2000, the Supreme Court stopped the ballot counting in Florida and threw the election to George W. Bush. And the same type of thing could happen with this. Well, why do you think Trump will not accept defeat and will try to steal the election? What makes you think he'll do that?
That's very, very simple, because he said so. I mean, he was asked on a number of occasions, like, will you accept a peaceful transfer of power? That's a no-brainer, right? And he says, well, I got to see how it goes. Let's see. You know, and just putting out into the public the idea that he is the authority to make that decision.
Well, so what is the likely scenario on election night to the first week, to even the months leading up to January 20th, our inauguration day? What are some likely scenarios? What's possible?
So say on November 3rd, Biden wins by a landslide. You know, I think that would be incredibly good, and it would really cut, you know, right, Dave? Really be hard for Trump to do any shenanigans with that if Biden really wins by a landslide. So everybody should vote
on November 3rd.
On November, you know, make sure to vote on time and do all your things. In Oregon, we have a good system. We have our ballots ready, and we should mail them, give the postal service a good amount of time to count them, to get them in. So that would be great if he wins by a landslide.
But get your ballot in by the 27th.
27th,
By Tuesday. Yeah, by this Tuesday.
To your local library.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Right. Or your local library.
Yeah.
And it's all paid for, you know, the ballot. You don't have to put a stamp on the...
No stamp necessary, right? Okay, so what happens if it's close?
If
there isn't a Biden landslide,
right. Then there's going to be, you know, and in Oregon, I think we're okay in terms of how the ballots will be counted. But in other states, there's going to be legal fights galore about counting mail-in ballots. And, you know, Trump's hoping that in battleground states, Republican legislatures, when they authorize the electors for the Electoral College, might well determine that the popular vote, which does count the mail-in ballots, is fraudulent. And then those legislatures might well authorize some, you know, BS group of electors for Trump, and that will go to the Electoral College. And all of this can end up in many, many court cases, potentially, again, going to the Supreme Court. And that's why the Barrett confirmation for the Republicans is so crucial. So, I mean, those are all, that could take weeks of litigation back and forth.
So tell us about these coalitions, both the national and the local, that have formed to protect the results. Who's in them? Who's in these coalitions?
Well, I mean, first of all, it's so great that, you know, what we're seeing here locally is that the coalitions are building right now, you know, very fast. It's very heartening that that's happening. So there's outreach to many, many civic and social justice organizations, encouraging everyone to sign on to pledges of resistance to a coup and any attempts to steal the election. And all of this is providing like a narrative that we're creating, very separate from the one that the Republicans are creating, and saying that, you know, we are going to stop this. We are going to protect democracy, and we are going to defeat apathy that says, well, you know, there's nothing we can do about it, that we are going to be alive and out in the streets and everywhere.
The people doing it are like faith leaders, some union people, lots of like climate jobs and environmental people and you know, all kinds of people.
Right.
That are coming from organizations too. So right. they're representing all the people back home in their organization.
Right. So there's national and local coalitions forming. Nationally, there's a Choose Democracy Coalition, and they have a pledge, and that pledge is one that we're using something very close to that in our local Portland Defend Democracy Coalition. So that's a good name to remember, Defend Democracy Coalition, because that's a local coalition. We can talk more about it later, but on November 4th is going to be a huge mass protest that will end up at Waterfront Park. So it's a day, that's a particular day to all really come out and be together. But I wanted to just
I wanted to
mention the different local groups that are in the Defend Democracy Coalition. Not all of them, because there's so many that have signed on and signed the pledge and petition. And some of the groups include Jobs with Justice, APANO.
Well, now what's APANO?
Oh, APANO is the Asian Pacific American Network. Oregon. Yeah.
That's right.
APANO, Coalition of Black Trade Unionists, the American Federation of Teachers of Oregon. So that's the Oregon Federation of Teachers, you know, many college teachers and community college teachers. The Evergreen and Reynolds Education Association. So those are public school teachers in the Reynolds District and Evergreen up in Vancouver. The Alliance for Democracy, of course, that's there, that they have to be in this. 350.org. So there are a number of climate environmental groups in the coalition, and Indivisible. So those are just you know, some examples of the groups that have signed a pledge. And also many have signed a petition to our local and state elected officials, like the city council, the mayor, county commissioners, and governor, that says that we expect that they will do their part in protecting democracy and do this by not allowing collective punishment at public protests, which are going to be happening.
By police.
Yeah, by the police. No collective punishment by the police, like any kind of tear gas and any kind of use of so-called less than lethal weapons. You know, all the kinds of activities that the police certainly engaged in during to many of our community members during Black Lives Matter protests.
That term isn't exactly right. It's less lethal. They're still lethal, but they're less lethal than a rifle.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So-called less lethal.
Not less than lethal.
Oh, yeah.
They're less lethal.
Less, yeah, right.
Excuse me.
That's good.
So you mentioned a pledge. And what is the pledge?
Well, I have here at hand the pledge, since we're talking to a union audience. Well, not only a union audience, but hopefully a lot of union people listening in. The pledge that local unions are gravitating to reads,
Union local blah blah blah, our union will partner with local and national organizations who are pledging to, quote, activate their members and take coordinated action to protect democracy, end quote. If the candidate who loses in the U.S. presidential election, according to a preponderance of evidence and the conclusions of nonpartisan and objective sources, refuses to concede in a peaceful and timely manner.
So this is what you're asking
That's it.
Local unions to sign on to. So what I noticed this piece about preponderance of evidence and nonpartisan objective sources. So I expect that the media, you know, we have a right-wing Oregonian and we have Fox News, and that we're going to get all kinds of distorted information about what's actually happening with the ballot counting and with the elections, and right? I mean,
Well, we have to listen to Democracy Now also.
And we all have to figure out how to get the word out that people.
Yeah. And that's why we have to form this network.
Yeah. So why don't these groups just, you know, trust in lawsuits or the courts or Congress to do the right thing to prevent a coup?
They don't have a good track record. And they have a habit of sitting on their hands. And Trump has really appointed so many people, bad people, to the courts that they're, you know, some courts are fair, but lots of them aren't. So we really feel like it's going to take a massive outpouring of people, kind of like Belarus and Bolivia and the Black Lives Matter.
Right.
And not only coming out in masses, but staying out there day after day. We're going to have to stay with it. That's.
You think that a protest, mass protest in the streets, are going to be enough to stop a coup?
I think so. Yeah. If we can get so many people out, and we can disrupt business as usual by being out, which we, you know, especially if labor gets involved. We can do that. I mean, this is not business as usual. And I think people are starting to recognize that this is a time when we're going to have to get off our butts and do something, or we're going to be in real trouble.
Yeah, I mean, it depends. I think that being out in the streets, just like what Dave is saying, that it really, it's going to involve creativity. And we should ask, like, how can teachers, how can government workers, railroad workers, truck drivers, longshore workers, and others, you know, how can they stop or slow things down? It's very interesting that, I mean, something we don't remember enough is that the Association of Flight Attendants called for a mass mobilization at airports and a general strike. And that's what pushed Trump and his Senate supporters to abandon their shutdown of the federal government a few years
ago. It was actually when a bunch of air traffic controllers called in sick at the same time, and it stopped the flights at LaGuardia.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's an example of something that can be done, and we should lift that up
by workers.
So being out in the streets, people have to use their particular, I think the best thing is for people to use their particular role, to figure out what they can do. And like air travel, that's very important. Stopping commerce in many ways, rail traffic,
ports,
all of those pieces are, you know, potentially very important.
I think a lot about the Black Lives Matter. I don't know if they're still happening, but we went on these caravans, hundreds of cars in a caravan driving around, blowing bum, 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 Black Lives Matter, blowing their horns. And that's pretty, that potentially could be very disruptive to commercial traffic. You know, we could be going over and over the St. John's Bridge over and over and over again, for instance.
Right.
There is a history in one union of going on strike for political reasons and having a huge impact. You know who I'm talking about?
Longshore Union.
Longshore.
The Longshore.
Yeah, they're heroes. So, it's something that, that is great. But the reason I like to bring up the air traffic controllers is because that's very recent. So it shows that we can, Longshore and others can do that again and think about what they can do. It also is important that Richard Trumka, you know, the head of the AFL-CIO, pledged to defend democracy. He said that the AFL-CIO categorically rejects all threats to the peaceful transition of power. The labor movement simply will not allow any breach of the U.S. Constitution or other effort to deny the will of the people. you know, that you, that union members stand ready to do our part to ensure his defeat in this this election is not done properly. Those are good. That's good.
That's encouraging. Are there other like national level or regional labor bodies that have pledged to disrupt business as usual?
SEIU nationally and the CWA.
Communication workers
are they're convening meetings all over the country to plan a response if this happens, if we need to.
SEIU is the Service Employees International Union, and some central labor councils, I understand.
Yeah. Yes, in Rochester, New York, and there was another one that has pled, that has called on the AFL-CIO to call for a general strike.
So I can fill in Western Massachusetts. And just this week, the King County Central Labor Council in Seattle.
Hey, that's
they
getting,
did it again.
That's getting close. That
WTO they called for a general strike.
So, I mean, all of this, you know, statements and resolutions are good. And what's really needed is to have discussion, rank and file discussions, where this gets into, you know, the workplace, where people start talking about this to each other, mm-hmm. so that things can blossom in a way that they did when people called in sick, you know,
and families and neighborhoods and churches, mm-hmm. and wherever people are. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And if the hope, my hope is that we're going to build this up so big, the way it's growing, it looks like we will, that Trump and his buddies, well, Trump is such an idiot, he may not see it, but he has fools in his cohort, that they're going to look at this and go, no, it ain't going to work to try to pull this off. We can't steal this election.
Well, yes, if the Longshore Union shuts down the docks from, you know, British Columbia to Mexico, and the big corporations start losing millions of dollars, they're going to scream at Trump.
And I think the ILA, the East Coast Longshore Union, has started moving on this.
Well, yeah, there's a national labor coalition or grouping network forming that is more left labor, and it does include some people from the ILA, East Coast. Yeah, I mean, so that these are all in discussion stages and have to be brought into membership. I mean, that's something I feel strongly about, that, mm-hmm. you know, it has to go deeply into the membership. And
union leadership is going to have a hard time calling for a strike, because they're, you know, they're under a contract with their employers, and they're going to have a hard time calling for their members to stop work because they're breaking the contract. But they don't have to if
people start calling in sick.
the rank and file people just don't go to work.
Yeah.
and the way this is moving, I think people, there'll be leadership popping up within locals, that in workplaces, that say, hey, we got to do this.
So what are the initial plans for mass resistance? You mentioned November 4th.
November 4th, Defend Democracy Coalition is calling for a huge, massive march and rally on November 4th. Now, that's a day that will, you know, might be a very celebratory day if there's a huge landslide for Biden. But it also, if it's close in any way, it's a day we really need to come together to beat back any kind of form of apathy, to say, no, we're going to keep going.
That's Wednesday after election.
Wednesday after November 3rd. I don't even want to call it election day, because it's election month or something.
Yeah. No, it's basically to protect the results, to count every vote. Right. And I know that the initial plans are to meet up at Revolution Hall over on Southeast 12th and Stark at 2 p.m. and march across the bridge to Waterfront Park for a rally at 4 p.m. and then when it gets dark, march back across the bridge. But that may change. But that's the what's in the air at this time.
Hold that date.
Yeah.
Can I say one more thing about the coalition? That
yes.
It's quite amazing how fast this coalition and or network of groupings is coming together, you know, just really, really fast, that people are taking the pledge and signing this petition to electeds. And this grouping is really going to be needed even if Biden wins. It's not the end if Biden wins and Biden wins big, because we have got to keep going as a community, as unions and community groups. We've got to keep going to transform this country in so many ways, because we can't go back to what it was like before the pandemic and before Trump. It was already, you know, devastating racially, you know, in terms of racial justice for workers, for the climate.
Well, thank you. We're running out of time, but can you tell how our listeners can keep in touch with what's happening as this mass resistance develops?
Sure. I'm going to give you, there's going to be more web presence, but at this point, I want to give you a really important phone number, and it's a good phone number for, especially for unions, but for anyone. If you want to talk about your union joining the coalition, call 503-752-5112. 503-752-5112.
If you as an individual want to take the pledge, the Labor for Defending Democracy pledge, go to bit.ly/laborDD. That's small, lowercase, bit.ly/ABOR DD. Wraps it up for tonight's Labor Radio, this Monday and every Monday at 6 p.m. on KBOO. Lori King and Dave King of PDX Labor Defending Democracy. I'm Jamie Partridge. Stay tuned for Prison Pipeline.
You are tuned into listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Baby, you understand.